corner going, yeah, tell me how, because like this is a real problem. That's what part of this class is about. Just getting out of the building stuff is hard. And when I say getting out of the building, I don't just mean physically. I mean getting people to do something for you who don't know you, who have no reason to want to help you in theory, that you're going to either elicit information, get them to, you know, do, you're essentially trying to social engineer people to assist you in building your company. And these assignments, while simple for some of you, are painful for others, are exactly this point. So let me start, because I know not only one, but a couple of you have asked, I don't know where to start. No, you didn't use that voice, but that's what it sounds like to me. Oh, help me. Because I remember that's how I felt like, well, if I stare at the telephone long enough, will it dial itself? And it never did. So I had to learn how to actually call people. So, or nowadays, email, Twitter, Facebook, telepathy, I don't know, implanted brainwaves. However you do that, what do you think, if you don't know any founders of any companies, for those of you really facile at this, and the assignment says, find some startup, and you really don't know any good friends who did this, what's a good way to get somebody to actually talk to you, and how, where would you start? Anybody? Any idea? Yes,
Rick.
Here. This is a good space. Do we have a B-Space email for the class? You know, for those of you who are truly paralyzed, because, and I don't mean this as a pejorative, but as a, oh my gosh, how do I start? The first people I would ask is send out a panicked email that starts, help, I'm a classmate of yours trapped in Steve's class. Thing, and I'd say, it's too late to drop. I've never called, you know, a customer before. Do any of you know somebody I could talk to? Seriously. And do we all agree that you promise not to laugh at whoever sends that email? Does everybody promise? Seriously. I'll smack you if you do. You get the D. It's the one D I'm going to give out. But if we agree to do that, that's a first level place to start. And if you think about that in the real world, that's how it's going to work. Because you might not have classmates, but what will you have? Colleagues. What will these people become after you leave? I'm sorry? Alumni. Alumni network. Great to tap into. Man, I'd be saving email addresses. I'd be figuring out where everybody's going. Who else besides colleagues? Who else? You don't know anybody in the valley. You just moved in. Who else would you go after?
That's the centers that we source.
Great. Tell me about that.
Well, they're pretty good relationship with
a lot of... Great. Who would you talk to at Lester Center? Is there a name? Or is it just that you walk in the door and say, help? Okay. Great. Who else?
There are a couple names.
Who else? Right. But let's hold that thought. But at Lester Center, this is a good riff. Yes.
Jerry Engel.
Jerry Engel, the head of Lester Center. Dave Sharon, who runs the startup incubator. I literally walk into that office and say, I'm a student in Steve's class and I'm stuck. I need some names to talk to. Good place to start. Who else? Somebody said?
Startup fair.
Yeah, there's a startup fair at Stan, a school, small school to the south, not as good. But
right? So one thing you may want to, sometimes you got to be a little persistent too. Like, for example, they don't respond to you, that's fine. I mean, I sat on David Sharon's. Basically, I sat outside his office for 8 months before he really decided to talk to me. And now we've got a great relationship. But he was busy, or he had stuff going on, or just don't take it personally, which is not easy to do.
And that's part of what I'm trying to teach you, is that a hang-up, you know, or a click, or, gee, I'm too busy, or I just deleted your email, just means you haven't sent me enough. Yes?
So you have to be founders?
No, could be. I think the assignment is a startup company. So somebody was involved in a startup from day one. I think the first assignment simply says, tell me about customer discovery in some early stage company. And the reason why I pick an early stage company is by the time the company is 10,000 people, no one really remembers how the company started. And if they do, they're lying because they were all geniuses by the time it gets big. What you really want to hear is, and it doesn't even have to be a successful company, it's just, tell me, did these guys do or women do customer discovery? And the next assignment will be, did they do validation? And the next part will be, did they do customer creation? But you go to a new city. You don't know anybody. How else would you do it, Chris?
No, actually, I just had a question. Yeah. Maybe I missed because I came in late. But yeah. Is it the same company throughout?
No.
Three?
So that would be easy, wouldn't it? No, I want you, once you figure it out how to do it once, it should be easy to do it on a different company. But for your final project, you can go back and use one of those companies again. Right? And by the way, we're going to post your final project details, but you should be forming teams of people you want to work with. The final project is a team exercise. These assignments are individual exercises. You knock off these assignments, the final project becomes no-brainer.
But with the final project, just make sure you run it by us so that we're at least all on the same page in terms of the type of company and what you're trying to get out of it. That'll really help you stay working on the back.
So there's a requirement for us to vet your idea for the final project. So if you go to a... Yes?
For the assignments, the three different companies? Three assignments.
Chris, what's the answer?
Yes, it is. Three different companies.
Yes. Okay. Back over here. That's okay. I'm mumbling down here. Sorry, Samir. But if you go to a new city, who wants to sell you something if you're starting a company? Who wants to sell you something? Come on. Who? Say it.
Lawyers.
Who else? Accountants. Who else?
Management
consultants, people sell rent and space, etc. There's a whole bunch of service providers. You think they might know some other companies as well, yet they want something from you. They're all about, since they're a service business, relationship building. Guess what? Get to know some lawyers and accountants and whatever saying, listen, I'm going to do a startup one day, and I'll have to plug into your network. And right now, you're in a great position because you could use Berkeley Haas School, you know, blah, 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 means... You're not really a threat to anybody right now, but you're a potential customer to many. Is this helpful to some or all? I'm assuming half of you knew this and the other half didn't. But be aggressive, be fearless, and you can't fail here when someone hangs up on you. Right? Okay, they're lost. And as Ian said, if it's somebody you really want to get to, you know, send them flowers, for God's sake. It's a very cheap, what the hell? You will get a call back going, wait till my wife finds out.
Steve, another idea. The business plan competition is 25 groups. You can almost offer this up to them and say, can I spend a little bit of time with you? And I'll give you the work. I'll give you the 2 pages. Almost like free advice.
Yeah, for customer discovery, that would work as well. Is that helpful? Any more questions on Simon? All right. Any other logistical questions? Okay. Today, we... are going to go through my favorite part of customer discovery. IMVU case. That's what we're going to talk about first. And then we're going to talk about customer discovery after that. Who read the IMVU case? Good. The answer should be 100% of hands going up. All right, Dave, why don't you start off and tell us about the IMVU case?
Didn't have my hands up, so I'm
going to... You have a PhD program here? Very impressive. John, how about you?
Yeah, I read it, so...
Oh, thanks. Thanks for being part of the program here.
Filling out my role of summarizing the case. So, IMVU is basically a case about these two guys that start a company that's focused on like avatars and instant messaging. And the case looks at how they go through their customer development process and how they take a deliberate approach to basically iterate on customer feedback. And along the way, they have decisions to make about the three offers, I think two term sheets and one acquisition offer.
that they're mulling over, and around that are questions about what kind of board structure they should take, or at least who they should fill in their board.
Okay. That's a good start. Someone else? James?
So the backstory is that they had both worked at, or I think it was Will that founded Bear.com previously. And a lot of the lessons he learned at Bear.com he applied to sort of the operational model at IMBU. So, for instance, at Bear.com, it took on a lot of venture capital and spent about 5 years in actually developing the product, and then only to find out that nobody really wanted the product. So that kind of set the stage for them at IMBU, where they pursued more of an agile product development process and continued to iterate very frequently.
So 5 years developing a product. So what was wrong with that?
Well, they never really got any customer feedback throughout that entire 5 year process. They just assumed there was going to be a market for it, limited customer interaction. And when they actually did deploy the product, the response was pretty underwhelming.
Did it say how they launched the product up there?
Yeah, they launched the product in October 2003 and it only generated $20,000 in the first month in revenue. And then spent $40 million in VC money developing the product.
Say that again.
They spent $40 million developing their product in VC money for 5 years without recognizing what the customer really wants.
14 or?
40.
40 million in. And how much in the after launch?
20K and.
These two aren't equal. In fact, it sounds like a small version of WebAng. What happened here? Think about that for a sec. We'll talk some more. Anything else about the case? Any other founders? Anybody else involved in the company?
Yes, Eric at these.
All right, so there's another guy, Eric Ries. And who's Eric Ries?
So he's an old buddy of Will's that worked at was it Rocket Science Games?
Uh-huh. Buddy of Will's.
Uh-huh. He joined to kind of do the technology part. They also mentioned, I mean, not a founder, but they mentioned bringing in a name withheld, kind of Jamie Bell in the case, person who also, you know, thinking that that there needed a kind of a professional CEO type, was brought in by Will and the board to run operations.
This is all about there, right? It's not about.
Yeah,
okay.
Before.
Yeah. And so what was the there story with Jamie, Eric, and Will? What happened? We now 40 million to 20K. We're thinking a bit about what was the setup for, you know, IMBU. So everybody's kind of a victim of their own experience, and this is what these guys have been through.
So they followed the traditional product development model. They had complete secrecy. They didn't share anything with the customer. They even didn't share information between the different departments, according to the case. And until the launch, it was just they were just sitting there perfecting certain features of their product based on their own internal feedback. And they spent a very long time and delayed the launch several times until they finally got it out and they found out that their assumptions about the market were not correct.
Hmm. What was the CEO doing?
He was hiring, you know, a big marketing team that were preparing for the launch, and he was also, you know, he was working with, you know, just the typical way, you know. When he joined, he hired more people. So they said in the case that he's not a real person. He was just like it's a proxy for many different managers who joined the company at that time.
No, actually, it's a proxy for someone we don't want to sue us.
Okay.
To be fair, but what did he do that was typical or not typical for him?
So rather than focus on customer, he just keep raising money and contact.
It was great at raising. Raised lots of money. I mean, what was the vision of this thing? Of there, not at IMB.
They said they wanted to develop a new platform, sort of like AOL, and they couldn't see themselves shipping an AOL that was buggy. So they wanted to ship the perfect product.
AOL kind of like for virtual world, right?
Right.
I mean, they were going to be the next platform in 3D. And so Will and Eric somehow part because of what happened.
They shifted direction after they realized they weren't going to make much revenue on the current product.
And what direction did they shift?
The defense industry application.
Oops. Okay. So any other comments about there? Didn't work. Yeah.
I just thought it was kind of Eric said. He said it was funny because I asked him why we're not shipping stuff. It's not perfect, and Microsoft sends out this junk all the time, making tons of money. They would be like Microsoft, why don't we ship product?
Yeah. In the slight defense of there, I could say that in certain cases like this product, I think it sounds like they did make a mistake of not asking potential customers to sort of give their feedback on what they had. But unlike IMVU, there had the ambition of a much larger product that required a lot of work before you even ship anything in the first place. So I don't know if it's fair to compare and say why didn't they ship in the first year or whatever.
We'll talk about that. I think that's a great point. I should point out, does it say in the case how they launched there? See how they launched? Any words about it? I'll tell you a hint. It wasn't even advertising. They did the world's best, truly, best PR launch. They didn't pay a dime to at least the journal or that did a lot to their PR agency, but it was great press. They were on the cover of the business section of the Times, had a great placement in the journal. I mean, huge launch. Nothing to be very proud of. And literally, they drove all of 30,000 customers to the website. Any reason why that launch wasn't huge? Anybody? Any?
Don't know exactly why.
Okay.
The download was like 100 megabytes or something.
Okay. So download was big. 100 meg, that could back then be a problem. Why else?
Well, in other words, no validation. So they got all the eyeballs, but they were not sure that the people stick with their product.
Okay.
They can
test. Okay, yeah.
I think based on what I felt was their target customers were not the ones who were reading Wall Street journals at the time.
Yeah. By the way, if you're the CEO of a startup, where do you want your picture to show your mother?
Outlet.
Yeah. You want to show your mother TechCrunch? Hey, Mom, look, I'm on this blog. So once a blog. But, Mom, look, you can buy it on the newsstand. Oh, look, I bought a copy from your cousin and, you know, whatever. Oh, my son or daughter is now famous. Now, maybe it's a little different now. Maybe Mom really does know. Maybe she's reading Valley Wag to make sure you're not there. For all you know, just to make sure there's no pictures of you. But probably not. I mean, here was something else which wasn't intuitively obvious, at least to the CEO. We could laugh about it now. But it was like, well, I think the Journal and the Times are important. That's where we're going to launch our product. Now, if you don't understand your customers, duh. Now, if they would have understood their customers, we would be having a different conversation about what media or how they reach them or whatever. But I just want to point out, it was some of the best business press I had ever seen. For a startup, it was pretty impressive. They got people writing about them, you know, for weeks. Since none of them happened to be potential customers.
I think maybe a little bit on the nature of the user base they were targeting. Well, is they're relying, this type of platform relies on the network effect, and it would seem to be a little bit more natural to grow a customer base over time rather than here's the big announcement, everyone flocks to the website, there's not much there, you know, stick around.
So what, when someone sticks around, what's that called?
Stickiness.
What metric do you measure? Sticking. You know?
Repeat.
Retention. Right? So their retention essentially was zero. Right? They had, so think about it, when we're thinking about a sales pipeline, right? You have acquisition on one side, you have lots of other stuff in the middle, but retention is the thing you're measuring, and then you get to measure if you retain them, you know, average order size, lifetime value, etc. Right now, they managed to do a launch, and all they had was a t-shirt that said, I spent $40 million and retained enough customers for $20K of revenue. It was probably the t-shirt bill. Was there a question? Yeah.
I was just going to say, even if they got the right relevant media, I don't think the market or the customer would embrace the product at that.
So let's put a stake through the heart of there, and I think summarize what you guys have said. So one was, you know, the outcome was they launched without understanding customers. But the core problem that I think you guys diagnosed is they didn't understand customers. Right? There was no real understanding. It was just development, launch, assume, miracle would happen here. By the way, this is not much different than lots of companies in the Valley. So while we get to sit and laugh at people in cases, I should remind you that the last thing you want in your career was a pseudonym for you. This is where you're supposed to laugh rather than gasp. And I don't want to see your name 15 years from now in a case as the, gee, how come they didn't do X? At least about customers. We could have you named for something else. So these guys left there and they decided to do something better. What were they going to do better? Let's talk about IMVU. One.
So they have this, the IMVU owner's manual philosophy.
Yep.
Where, you know, I don't even know the case calls it agile, but they have this agile development process where they want to, from day one, put it out there, get feedback from customers.
Put what out there?
Put what they're going to develop is this, basically some of the same technology, an IMChat client. That allows for a very rich representation of the avatars, 3D, and their goal is actually to monetize it through selling all the different apparels and all the different, I don't think it's in this case, it's in the Second Life case where Second Life where you can do moves and things like that. But
so they were going to monetize by how?
By selling credits into, you could buy credits to spend inside of the system.
For what?
For clothing. For
did I get real T-shirts and
no, all virtual world items that you
for
could
for virtual goods.
Not even well goods. Yeah, I guess they're goods, but they're virtual identities.
Okay,
it's making your entity even cooler in the environment.
And when did they start charging?
Right away.
What? When did they start charging? Right away. How right away? The product was finished? Why?
Well, they had very low expectations, right? I think it's $300.
Is that their expectation?
They were really just saying, you know, we don't care how much we get, we just want to get it going.
Sure.
They wanted experience with having sell the product. They wanted the customer feedback, and part of the customer feedback is convincing the customer to purchase the product. So the sooner you try and get someone to buy the product, and the sooner someone pays for it, the sooner you get information about what's working and what isn't. And who you're like, for instance, they got a lot of information about demographic information that they wouldn't have gotten if they hadn't actually charged for the product. They ran into some good things about their demographics. They had a lot of users, but a lot of them were teenagers, and so they had problems monetizing. That's only information you get when you try and monetize. Give it away, you can't get that information.
Interesting. Anybody else?
Just out of the, I think it's
or they were burned by the previous experience at there.com where they spent 5 years building a product and they didn't get the realizing benefit from that.
So now they've swung to the other extreme, right?
Exactly.
Right? We're charging from, like, we're shipping source code to you guys. You put it together in your computer and we'll charge you for it. Thomas?
Maybe to handle this, they knew that some of the customers, or maybe most of the customers, would be annoyed by money software, but they wouldn't need to just accept this was intended of having people.
And so they, your point is they were okay with annoying customers because the ones they didn't annoy would give them feedback, is that?
No, also those that they didn't know they gave them feedback. And they just valued this feature much higher than the potential negative price.
So they were doing a paid beta test. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think of the fact that they also help them to filter the people they're really interested in, like identify the people that are really the core users.
Okay, so they were looking for core, kind of hardcore early adopters. Interesting. Any other comments?
They essentially wanted to test all their assumptions. Who's going to pay, what kind of demographic people are going to pay, and what the end customer is going to look like.
So that's kind of interesting. So if I want to test all my assumptions and figure out what the end customers are going to look like, and I'm shipping a product, doesn't that mean the only end customers I'm looking for are people who are happy with buggy, unfinished products?
Behind it.
Yeah. So they were actually selling early on to visionaries who would put up with this stuff? I don't know. How come they didn't use an ad-supported model or some other model? They did? I think that's what they were spending. They were spending that. But how come they didn't just say, you know, we're making our money off of banner ads and everything else? Any idea? Ben?
Well, I think they didn't have the traction.
Didn't have the traction?
So I think it was hard to lure advertisers.
Okay.
Good.
I think they raised very little in venture capital, $1 million. Very low burn rate of around $50,000. I think they only initially had a team of just six, so almost all developers, nobody in marketing, nobody in sales, nobody in general administrative finance.
Wow. Low burn, small team, no VC. Have they raised money?
Angel.
I'm their advisor.
You really want to know how they raised money?
You got it from, you got it from Steve Blake.
I got to tell you the story. So, so Will Harvey had been my VP of engineering 12 years earlier, so I'd known Will for a long time. And we'll tell you the rest of the punchline, but it's really a funny story. Is that, and Will had the stature in the gaming community and software community to get an advisory board, like the dumbest guy in the room. You know, there was the head of biz dev of Electronic Arts. There were, you know, senior lawyers from, you know, name brand firms. There were a couple of VCs who would just show up because Will asked them to. And some of us wrote checks for Will. And then Will would run out of money. And the week before he'd run out of money, he'd come over to the house and say, Steve, I'm out of money. I said, okay, how much do you need? He said, well, I needed another, you know, $250,000. I'm not going to write that check, but here's what we're going to do. You need to say this at our next advisory board meeting. I'll have already written out a check. So next advisory board meeting, Will presents about where we are and how we're doing, and I go, that's great. Will says, but I really need more money. I reach into my pocket and I say, here's $50,000. Who else is in? We did that 3 times in a row. That's how Will got to $1 million. But don't try this at home. But the Dusty truly was low burn, small team, angels. And does the case talk about this advisory board at all? And what's it say? Can I remember?
They were looking for results in terms of revenues, and one of the directors said that this would be probably the last before we see real numbers.
I mean, we'd be sitting here, and we'll be saying, yep, $300 a month, and we've been writing checks, earning them in the mail. And after a while, even the most, you know, Will's biggest fans were going, you know, someday our prince will come, but it isn't going to be here. Because we're spending a lot of time for free. We're not even on his board. Just give him good advice. And so it's getting kind of antsy in this case. Near the end of it, about, like, when are we going to see results? What else happened at InView? What were some of the building blocks? We talked about contain the cash, burn rate. What else were they doing? Small team, no VC. Anything else? There are three kind of key concepts. Give you a hint on page 5. Yes.
So they wanted to test the critical assumptions first.
Right. So again, the antithesis of there. Test assumption. Fast and early. These guys were the world's best. In fact, they're the gold standard at it. That initial team took this and made it their DNA. What do we need to do to test? I mean, there was discussion in the building, but those discussions, you know, I would ask if the founder was here, like, how long did those discussions go on? But trust me, they didn't go on for days or weeks. There were some hypotheses, but boom, it ended up in code, and then, you know, customers voted with their wallet. What else did they do? Yes, Hubert.
They basically became a developer on the team.
I'm sorry?
They started with a developer on the team. They had only customer.
I think they had developers, no? I think there were more. Does the case say? I wonder what the other 5 people did.
No, yeah. 5 developers and 1 non-developer.
Yeah, I think it was 5 developers and 1 non-developer.
Yeah.
Okay, what else?
Customer feedback.
Yeah, all the time. All the time. Now, remember, what these guys figured out was we weren't building the product for every comment. And this is a fundamental mistake that a lot of people who hear customer development simply think, oh, I get it, it's a giant focus group. I take all the comments and then I write all the features that everybody asked for. They weren't looking for that. What they were looking for was, given the product we just put out, were there customers and market for the product as spec? And if not, why not? That's different from, we got 400 feature requests. Let's go implement every one of them. Is that clear? That distinction is truly subtle but important. Because if you don't get it, you turn customer development into the world's largest focus group, and you do the inverse of what you're supposed to do. Yeah, they were out getting constant customer contact, but they were not out to take every request as, oh, engineering, here's what you need to build. Every piece of feedback came to, what are we missing about understanding who our customers are? And I don't think the case talks about it, but we'll talk a little bit later, is they finally took this to the next step and started building archetypes of who their customers were. And there were multiple signals on this noise. Who did they think their customers were? Is it same the case?
The truth is they thought initially the customers were exactly the same as data.com. So
which were?
The homemakers, the females, middle aged. But then they realized that it was not actually them. It was actually more than half of their customers were 18 years old.
Anything else about their customers? Anybody?
Yes. So, trying to understand that procedure you're talking about. For them, they kept getting feedback from, you know, teenagers wanting something, or adults saying that we don't want 14-year-old looking avatars. So the processing of that, that they realized we're really targeting a product for teenagers, and the new problem is how do we monetize teenagers? Is that kind of the steps they went through?
The steps were, A, was really the steps, and again, if we had the founders here, we'd ask them, but one of the initial steps, and one which for a web product was essential, it was actually a brilliant observation, is from day one, they instrumented the product, so they got infinite piles of data. Their customer advisory board meetings were not about, here's our opinion. It was, let me take you through each step on our website that these customers coming from these sites at these demographics and using at this and spending at that, we had more data than anybody on the planet. Now, sometimes we just didn't know which questions to ask in that data, and sometimes we had problems trying to understand, wait a minute, are we still missing some, you know, questions we should be asking? But that website and that company was data-intensive. And that was DNA that, in hindsight, if any of you are going to do anything on the web, it's criminal, criminal to start a web company without making sure you're collecting tons of customer data. Later on, we could figure out, gee, are you collecting too much? Are we not looking for this? And so what they were doing was trying to understand who's buying. Is it one monolithic customer base, whether archetypes or demographics or regional things that we ought to know? Later on, as you'll find out, and I don't think it talks about in this case, one of their markets did turn out to be teenagers. And by the way, how do teenagers buy products?
Really?
Cash. Interesting. What if you're in Singapore?
PayPal.
I don't know. Gee, if you're IMVU, guess what? You've just discovered you have an opportunity and a problem. How do I monetize teenagers in Singapore? Speak English, love the site. How do I monetize them anywhere? How do I monetize them in Canada or in Great Britain? And very interesting for those of you ever thinking about a Web 2.0 deal. How do you do transactions on the web in 14 foreign countries, particularly in an age demographic that doesn't even have a credit card? Oops. Think they knew that on day one? Not even a clue. So this case is kind of interesting, but if you read the case, it's not asking you any of this stuff. What's it asking you about? What's the dilemma, typical business school dilemma this case sets up?
Stated at the end of the case whether raise more money from these two different types of investors, one being the more traditional brand name, but you know, the strings being attached to all kinds of standard product development right. cycles, the other being a little more freewheeling type of VC, and then the third option being selling the company.
Right. That's the standard choice. By the way, these guys were doing, I thought someone said $300 a month in revenue. So how can they be raising VC money from world-class VCs? What happens? Case A? How do they get from $300 a month?
They started to get money from teenagers because of the fame their phone goes. So that went up the revenue to $2,000.
Right.
So they sold it for...
They went from $300 to $2,000 a month, and VCs are trying to give them money?
Well, they 10x growth.
Is that true, Holly?
That's true.
Thank you. Emma? Is that what happens?
I mean, that's what the case says, that their revenue increased to about 2,000 and then
right. Again, names change to protect the innocent.
I believe somebody named Steve Blank said it's the beginning of the hockey curve.
So if you read the case, we're sitting around the advisory board meeting. Remember, the only people who would even give us money was like when I kept throwing checks in. And finally I noticed, wait a minute, we have a hockey stick. And everybody kind of went, ha, 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 funny, Steve. No, I said, no, you guys don't understand. Look, let's draw this. It's a little hockey stick. And people were going, what's the point? I went, we got a VC deal here. They all kind of laughed. They said, you're out of your mind. No one would. I said, we're in a slight frothy little bubble here. Trust me.